from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim, in for Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, 10 more Democratic candidates for president debate tonight. We'll preview the event and look at the highlights from last night's debaters, including Elizabeth Warren, Julian Castro, and Cory Booker.
We've let the corporate gun lobby frame this debate. It is time that we have bold actions and a bold agenda. I will get that done as president of the United States because this is not about policy. This is personal.
Then the Supreme Court has blocked the Trump administration from adding a citizenship question to the 2020 census for now and ruled that federal courts do not have a role when it comes to claims of partisan gerrymandering. We look at the impact of today's decisions next on Forum. Join us. Welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim, in for Michael Krasny. Well, the first half of the Democratic debates are over, and last night, when several on Twitter kept asking, "Who is that?" did some of the lesser-known candidates break through? Which of the leading candidates faltered? And what struck you most about the direction and focus of the Democratic Party? We review last night's debate and preview tonight's with Mike Shepard. He's Washington Managing Editor at Bloomberg. Good morning, Mike Shepard.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. And Evan Halper, national reporter for the Los Angeles Times. Good morning, Evan Halper.
Hi, Nina. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. And you were in Miami, of course, last night. Talk about the mood and give us your quick take of the night.
Yeah, it was an interesting night. And I think a couple of the lesser-known candidates, like you said, did have moments. I mean, particularly Julian Castro, who made some points on immigration and really went after Beto O'Rourke, who did not have such a good night. Of course, the big headliner at the debate last night was Elizabeth Warren. She was the only one polling the top five in last night's contest, a lot more than the rest are in tonight's contest. And, you know, she showed herself to be just, you know, kind of untouchable. I mean, in terms of this format and with this group, no one was really able to lay a glove on her. And, you know, she came in the front runner in that group and, you know, she emerged pretty strong.
Would you agree with that, Mike Shepard, that she did what she needed to do last night?
Well, very much so. The moderators made it easier for her. She didn't have as much time as some of the other candidates when it came to actually speaking, if you clocked all the numbers. But she made her points very sharply. Warren was very well prepared. And none of the rivals on stage with her really laid a glove on her, at least in the eyes of one of the outside Democratic consultants that we talked to. And the whole evening really, in a way, let her stick to her stump speech and deliver her progressive message on everything from corporate power to gun control, and never really had to respond to some sort of sharp retort from one of her competitors.
Yes, it certainly started off in her wheelhouse with her talking about how the economy was working for a thinner and thinner slice at the top. But she did make some waves with her decision on health care. I mean, basically to say that she'd be willing to abolish private insurance in favor of a government plan. I want to play a little bit of Warren talking about health care and then get your take on what risks she may have taken by taking that stance last night on private insurance. Anyway, here's Warren on health care.
I've spent a big chunk of my life studying why families go broke. And one of the number one reasons is the cost of health care, medical bills. There are a lot of politicians who say, oh, it's just not possible. We just can't do it. It's have a lot of political reasons for this. What they're really telling you is they just won't fight for it. Well, health care is a basic human right, and I will fight for basic human rights.
So that's Elizabeth Warren. And so, Evan Halper, do you think when she said that she was willing to abolish private insurance in favor of a government plan that she took a big political risk here that could bite her later?
Yeah, I mean, she did. You know, it's interesting, though, because Medicare for All is one of those things that all the candidates like to talk about as a slogan. It's popular among Democrats, but when you really bore down on what it means and what it is, there's a lot of disagreement. And one of the big points of disagreement is whether there should be a single-payer system or we should keep some form of private insurance, you know, and just improve the Affordable Care Act. And, you know, she's talking more in the mold of Bernie Sanders. She and Bill de Blasio, the New York mayor, were the only two last night who said they want to get rid of private insurance. And that's, that's a very ambitious, very progressive way of going about it. And it's very popular with the party base, but, may not be so popular with swing voters and could be a tough sell in the general election. So, we'll see.
As we're talking about Warren, I'd love to just make the point that last night's Democratic debate was the first time more than one woman candidate was on the presidential debate stage. Mike Shepard?
Yes, actually, and that played out in one very memorable moment with Senator Amy Klobuchar. She delivered one of the night's more memorable zingers when she called out Washington Governor Jay Inslee as he was trying to claim the mantle on abortion rights. She jumped in and said, "I just want to say there are three women up here that have fought pretty hard for a woman's right to choose." And that drew loud applause. And that illustrated the moment there that we have three women on the stage.
Yes. And we have a cut of that exchange. Let's hear it.
"It should not be an option in the United States of America for any insurance company to deny women coverage for their exercise of their right of choice. And I am the only candidate here who has passed a law protecting a woman's right of reproductive health and health insurance. And I'm the only candidate who has passed a public option. And I respect everybody's goals and plans here. But we do have one candidate that's actually advanced the ball. And we got to have access for everyone. I've done it as a public option."
Senator Klobuchar, I want to get you. I'm fascinated by this, Senator Klobuchar.
I just want to say there's three women up here that have fought pretty hard for a woman's right to choose. I'll start with that.
Senator Klobuchar and Governor Jay Inslee. We are reviewing the first half of the Democratic debates last night, and we will preview tonight's second half of the debates. We're joined by Mike Shepard, Washington Managing Editor at Bloomberg, and Evan Halper, National Reporter for the Los Angeles Times. And you, our listeners, tell us who made an impression on you, who disappointed you, what issues or policies were music to your ears, what are you hoping will come up tonight that didn't come up to your satisfaction last night. Call us at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. Post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. On Facebook, you can tweet us at KQED Forum or email us at forum@kqed.org. We've only got a half hour on this, so the time to call is now. Now, Evan Halper, Senator Amy Klobuchar is, of course, trying to make her mark as the more moderate candidate in this race. Do you think that she was able to position herself clearly in a way that was appealing to the electorate?
Yeah, I think she did. I mean, before that, I just want to say I thought that was a clumsy move on the part of Jay Inslee, of the clip you just played. I mean, this is a guy who, you mentioned at the top of the show that some of these candidates, people were tweeting, "Who's that?" A lot of people didn't know who he is. He came in with a pretty strong record, especially on climate change, and he fashioned himself like the climate change candidate.
Yes.
And stirred up a lot of sort of interest from activists in demanding a climate debate and got into a public fight with the DNC over whether they'd have a debate just on that and sort of went into the event with some momentum. And then, as you pointed out, there were three women on this debate stage. It was historic, first time more than one woman was on a stage like this. To sort of make such an amateur move was really clumsy on his part. As far as Senator Klobuchar, I mean, that was a great moment for her. But beyond that, in terms of her sort of presenting as a centrist, she did a fine job at that. And she talked about, free college for everyone is something that she just isn't going to support because she doesn't think we have the money to pay for rich kids to go to college. She takes a more moderate approach on Medicare, but it's Medicare for all. But it's tough for a candidate like her, and also, Representative John Delaney was taking a middle line approach, and in a kind of different way, Congressman Tim Ryan was also. But all these centrists are trying to take some of the ground that Vice President Joe Biden has, and he's just so dominant in the polls right now that unless he falters, it's going to be tough for a Klobuchar or a Delaney or a Ryan to get any of that ground.
Yes. Where would you put Julian Castro politically, Mike Shepard? Would you put him more in the moderate or leftist camp?
That's a really good question. I think looking at him, I think he leans a little bit more moderate, but it's really hard to put a, you know, hang a label around him. He is trying to make his mark by, you know, in particular in the, you know, his exchange with Beto O'Rourke on immigration. He's a fellow Texan, and he called O'Rourke out on the subject, saying that, you know, the former congressman, if you had done your homework on this issue, you would know more. And he did stand out for having his own homework done.
Yes, and we have some tape of Julian Castro going after Beto O'Rourke on immigration. Castro has called for repealing Section 1325 of the Immigration and Nationality Act, which would decriminalize crossing the border. This is a position that he says O'Rourke opposes. Let's listen.
You said recently that the reason you didn't want to repeal Section 1325 was because you were concerned about human trafficking and drug trafficking. But let me tell you what. Section 18, Title 18 of the U.S. Code, Title 21 and Title 22 already cover human trafficking.
This is
drug
smuggler.
I think that you should do your homework.
We're going to make
issue.
Sure that they are deported.
If you did your homework on this issue, you would know that we should repeal this section.
Now, Mike Shepard, I know we need to let you go. So give me what you are going to be watching for tonight with the 10 contenders.
Oh, well, I think it's more of the who in this case. And I think it's going to be the former Vice President, Joe Biden. This will be his, you know, his moment to really break ahead or stumble. He'll be sharing the stage and spotlight with three other top polling rivals, Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, and Pete Buttigieg. His challenge will really be to stay out of trouble and avoid any of the gaffes or missteps that he's sometimes known for. And those include the remarks that he made just last week about his time in the Senate decades ago working with a pair of segregationist Democratic colleagues. And that haunted him through the weekend in South Carolina, where they had the party convention and the Clyburn fish fry. He was able to kind of move on from it, but that's always hanging out there. And unlike Elizabeth Warren had more of the stage to herself and the spotlight to herself, Biden will have to share it with three other contenders who are accustomed to trying to grab it, and they will try to grab it from him.
Mike Shepard, Washington Managing Editor for Bloomberg, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Evan Halper, National Reporter for the Los Angeles Times, will stay with us for the remainder of the half, and you, our listeners, are with us. So let me go to you and start with Francesca in Sebastopol. Hi, Francesca.
Hi.
Hi. What would you like to say?
The only thing that I would love to see the candidates talk about is climate change, because all of these other issues, which are, yes, very important, will not matter at all if we do not have a hospitable planet to live on. And I think that part of that is our leaders educating the public on what the situation is, because so many of us can't even wrap our heads around it. But with gentle guidance and education, then we can learn why we need to get on board and be cutting our carbon emissions and have a clear plan for that. Like all of the immigration issues of people trying to come over the border, a lot of that is from scarcity.
Well,
scarcity due to... Go ahead.
Yes, I understand. And all of the issues that are driving migration. Francesca, you are not alone in feeling that way. We've had quite a few listeners talking about climate change and wanting to hear more about that tonight. And Evan Halper, when the candidates last night were asked what they see as the biggest geopolitical threat, Beto O'Rourke did say climate change, and it seemed to be one of his stronger moments, even though it was a one-word answer, because after that he had a couple of other candidates follow suit. But overall, what happened to Beto O'Rourke?
He had a tough night. You know, he was not a great debater during the 2018 midterms, when he became, you know, famous for taking on Ted Cruz. And he was a great organizer. He's a great speech giver. He does a great job at town halls. But one place where he really had an opportunity to win that Texas race against Ted Cruz, who just seemed to have a lock on, you know, the vote in Texas, was when they met for debates. And He was not a strong debater then, and again, you know, last night he also was just not that strong of a debater. So he had been struggling. You know, there was a lot of hype around him as a candidate. There was a lot of excitement about him during the midterms, but he's had trouble, you know, getting out of the single digits in polling and in terms of substance. some of the other candidates are a lot more clear about what they're about and what their message is and what exactly they have to offer. You know, and he has a tougher time with that. He tries to go broader, but sometimes it's, you know, when the moderators tried to pin him down last night, he fumbled a couple of times, particularly when he was asked point blank, you know, there are candidates here who support a wealth tax, you know, a tax of 70% on super high income people. When your income gets over a certain point, do you support that? And, you know, he couldn't give an answer. Instead, he sort of broke into Spanish and talked more broadly about the economy. And I think voters just wanted a straight answer.
Yes. And the other candidates seemed to sense he was a pretty good target. Certainly, we heard Julian Castro, you know, targeting him for Texas. Clearly, they are fighting for Texas. And then you hear Bill de Blasio even going after him on health care. Amy from Orinda joined the conversation.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I hope you can hear me okay.
Yes.
So I was just so hopeful last night, just generally, that the commentary of all the candidates was civil, and it was just really refreshing to hear that. And then I just wanted to caution that with your first guest, talking about Senator Warren as the sort of front runner in the pack, and she may have been, but I want to be careful more than a year out from our election that we are not just having a presumptive front runner. I feel like that's what happened the last time with Hillary, and we need to just listen to all of these candidates. I think they all brought a lot of great ideas, and it was a policy debate in large part. So I was pleased with that.
Well,
so that's my comment.
Amy, I appreciate those comments. Thanks for reminding us how long we do have before the election, and also the fact that there was very little name calling, no personal attacks, really. Most of the sparring was over policy issues, Evan Halper. Nothing resembling the personal taunts that we have come to associate with President Trump. And in fact, on top of that, there was also discussion about how there was actually little need for fact checking, that for the most part, the candidates were honest.
Yeah, it was a very substantive debate. And, you know, to your caller's point, which is a fair one, there was a lot of media speculation early on when Elizabeth Warren, who I should clarify is not, you know, the front runner in the polls right now, but in that group who debated last night, you know, 10 of them debated last night, 10 will debate tonight. You know, she was the one who's leading among them right now.
Exactly.
But, yeah, people were writing Elizabeth Warren off a few months ago because the launch of her campaign wasn't so great and she struggled to get off the ground initially. And, you know, that was sort of telling of why it's dangerous to do that, because she's come roaring back. But yeah, we have many, many months ahead of us and anything could change. But notably, yes, it was a substantive debate. There was not a lot of there really wasn't much name calling at all. You know, when candidates called each other out, it was more on policy disagreements. And of course, President Trump was out there sort of trolling the thing. He tweeted in all caps, "boring" at one point, you know, and in the spin room after, some of the candidates were asked about that. And they just said, "look, we are not going to engage. I mean, this is how we got into trouble the last time."
Well, Evan Halper.
Him.
Oh, there you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sorry, your
and
phone
we're
cut
not
out for a second.
Yeah, I'm sorry. And we're not going to let you know, Trump make this about him. We're just going to ignore him.
Well, Calvin writes, "hearing the debates from the Dems, I thought I lived in a socialist country. President Trump is doing just fine. The economy is good. So don't fix it if it isn't broken." What do you think, Evan Halper, of the fact that there did seem to be an embrace of big ideas, big progressive ideas among the candidates last night, and the shift that people are talking about in the Democratic Party, especially from a couple of years ago?
Well, the Democrats have been talking a lot about the economy because they know they have to. I mean, Trump's out there saying the economy is great, and their message is the economy is not great for you. It's, you know, great for people who are at the top, and there needs to be some kind of radical change to make it great for the rest of America. And so along with that, you know, there's a frustration among voters about, you know, even through the Obama era, about this widening gap, the, you know, income gap and widening, you know, income inequality. And there's just more a building consensus among Democrats that addressing this takes bolder action than, you know, kind of the centrist policies of the 90s and even some of the policies of the Obama era. And there needs to be more to address income inequality. And that brings you in a lot of candidates that brings them toward these kind of big government proposals that are very popular with the progressive base in the party right now, and also seen as a counterpoint to Trump, who said, you know, he was going to blow up the system. He was out there for the little guy. He was going to open the factories. He was going to bring things to voters who were struggling in the working class, and Democrats are countering that with these programs.
Well, let's hear next from Noah in San Francisco. Hi, Noah.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just want to mention to your point before that I just want to say it was so refreshing to see a political debate that was honest and based on substance. So I just wanted to comment on that. But, there are two things stuck out to me last night. One is that the Democrats still did not focus enough on working people and capturing those people in the debate. And number two, I want to see the discussion about money and politics being number one, because even climate change and all these other huge things are never going to change until we get money out of politics. And I have a feeling that tonight, with some of the candidates like Bernie in there, that it'll be a much bigger topic of conversation. But I would really like to see those two things be much more of a focus for the debate.
Noah, thanks. Let's go next to Guillermo in Oakland. Hi, Guillermo.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for taking my phone call. I was watching the debate, and for me, a lot of those debaters came up and talked about many, many things. But Julio Castro, Julian, he was looking very straightforward through a policy that he has in mind, a person who has this already been studied, who's been going through to this. So he was the only one in terms of presenting a policy was straightforward.
Well, Guillermo, thanks for sharing that. Another listener writes, Evan Halper, I thought Cory Booker was great. Can you talk about him? Do you have any words for Cory Booker? Do you think he was able to really kind of solidify his positions and make an impact last night?
Yeah, he had a good night, and he was the one who actually got the most airtime in the end. And he, you know, Booker is a strong candidate, and there's been a feeling among people who watch these things that he's been undervalued, and in that, you know, he's someone that people have been talking about, you know, being presidential material for a long time. He's great at giving public speeches, and sometimes they almost border on like sermons. I mean, he's a very effective emotional speaker, and you know, he talks about issues like gun violence, like he did last night, in a very effective, compassionate way. His challenge has been sort of having a moment or a message and really, having it crystallize and seeing his campaign take off. And it just hasn't. You know, he's been struggling in the polls. Last night was good for him because he got a big audience and people could see how effective he could be. I think he still needs to be clear what his message is, and also one of his challenges is, you know, he refuses to be negative about Trump. You know, his message is one of love and hope, which appeals to a lot of people. But, you know, in this time, a lot of the party base is talking about the resistance and fighting Trump, and the party's trying to figure out how to deal with talking about Trump and confronting him after 2016's strategies did not work for them. There's some worry that you know, the Booker approach of just sort of, this message of love may not be the most effective.
Well, tonight we'll hear from Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, Pete Buttigieg, Kirsten Gillibrand, Michael Bennett, John Hickenlooper, Eric Swalwell, and Marianne Williamson, as well as Andrew Yang. So we'll be talking about what happened last night tomorrow. Thanks for joining us, Evan Halper.
Thank you so much, Mina.
Evan Halper with the Los Angeles Times. Another half hour forum is next. Stay with us.